collaboratively as the different individuals that occupy the space is for Eve, or Letter to Eve. And from that, we'll be working with, we want to actually build an Eve house, which like a prototype, a one bedroom hut. We want to try reimagine what So drawing on our own kind of narrative as African people in architecture, what does our kind of what does African architecture look like in 2018? Because what we found is that a lot of people, when they speak about Africa, they speak about Africa 300 years ago, but we are African today. What
in 2018?
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be African in 2018? So we really want to grow and expand on that narrative and see what will come out of it in terms of design. And Bo, do you want to add?
So the idea is we want to literally, because as you say, there's a gap in African development, right? So everything we're looking at, saying this is African art, is actually African relics and stuff that's actually not African. Java, that print that we call African print, that's Java print. That's not African print, first of all. And who says African print is not something that I can design tomorrow because I'm African? Right.
True. Absolutely. Aha. Yes.
So that's kind of what we're challenging, literally, our creatives also to, like, let's create a new dialogue of saying, what is African art today? You know, what's African print? What is a hut?
Yes.
And what is a shack?
And we must keep the dialogue going. And for today's event, before we wrap up, where can people find the information?
We have an Instagram account. It's at ours. .space, so ours.space.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So we will be watching this space. Sorry, I could not help myself. I just had to. And I just love to say, Mbongisani, thank you so much. Sanelisiwe, you have been amazing. Thank you so much for joining us here live in studio. And we can't wait to see all of the future endeavors for ours and Forever Art Collective. And we always pray that it continues to grow from strength to strength. And we would love to see you back in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So you've just been, we've just wrapped up an interview regarding ours, a creative space for entrepreneurs and events, and also Forever Art Collective. And up next, we'll be talking technology, but specifically we'll be talking about transhumanism with Flux Trends right after this on The Overnight Show.
Join the conversation
on the Cape Talk app, online and across the Cape on 567 AM.
You're with Cape Talk.
You are on Cape Talk, the time 32 minutes past midnight. And please do remember that your input is always welcome. We'd love to hear about your input in regards to all of the conversations that are being had and the conversations that we still yet need to have. So remember, the number is 021-446-0567. WhatsApp us on 072-567-1567. And voice notes are always welcome on that same number. Do tweet at Cape Talk. And please be sure to SMS us on 31567. 31567. Now we are touching on technology with transhumanism. So the boundaries between humans and machines are blurring, and humans have become accustomed to integrating wearable, ingestible, and embedded technologies with their bodies. But at the same time, machines are becoming virtually indistinguishable from humans. And Google's Duplex voice-generated AI software now also sounds so much like a real human being that we can actually no longer be sure if the voice on the other end of the phone is a human or a robot. And now, Flux Trends' latest open session, Transhumanism, How to Train Your Cyborg and Vice Versa, explores the impact of the merging of humans and machines on the future of work. And talking to us about this right now on the line is Bronwyn Williams from Flux Trends. And I'd just love to say to you, thank you, Bronwyn, for joining us, and welcome to the overnight show here on Cape Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I must admit, when I actually came across this piece about transhumanism, I was actually rather intrigued by it, and especially how technology is being integrated into society. And, you know, it's becoming either intriguing to some or alarming to many. But I know there are some people who may be hearing this term for the first time. And for those of our listeners who are only hearing of this now, could you actually please kindly describe what transhumanism is?
Well, transhumanism is really the next sort of evolution of the human race. So there's different forms of transhumanism. One could be something like genetic engineering, whereby we actually alter the cells of our embryos to create super children. And the other kinds of transhumanism could be things like cyborg development. That would be actually what we call biohacking, integrating machinery with our natural bodies in order to create humans that live longer and are more powerful or enhanced compared to what we are naturally when we just pop out of the womb, so to speak.
And do you personally feel, I know it's for some people, it may be, especially for those people who are part of the older generation, it may be something that they can't quite become accustomed to. But in your opinion, do you feel that there's actually a need for transhumanism within society at this moment?
Well, the aims of transhumanism are quite altruistic. It's basically going back to Star Wars, live long and prosper. So transhumanism is about living longer lives or as long as possible, as healthy and as happy as possible. So yes, the aim is completely altruistic and it's good for society. And then of course, when it comes to the sort of cyborg side of things, let's be honest here, we've been cyborgs for quite a while already. If you wear glasses or contact lenses or have a pacemaker or a hearing aid installed, you're already taking advantage of cyborg adaption.
And, you know, it's quite interesting. I mean, I guess that would make me a cyborg because I wear spectacles, but also when it comes to, I mean, when you actually mentioned pacemakers as well, that actually puts things into perspective. That's quite interesting. And now I actually wanted to also touch upon, certain facts that I found, especially according to, multiple studies. So according to multiple studies, anywhere between 40 and 50% of jobs worldwide are actually at risk of automation. That is being, you know, being replaced by machines, robots or algorithms. So when it comes to these stats, should it be a bit of a concern for us, or should we just learn to work with robotics? Should we just, you know, just embrace the transformation that is happening?
Well, that's where the whole transhumanism movement comes from. It's like we can be better than the machines that we create, or we can use those same adaptations that could theoretically replace the work we're doing to actually enhance ourselves so that we don't become redundant. But that's, of course, more sort of futuristic. When it comes back to trends in the workplace right now, yes, there is going to be disruption in the job market, but as much as we're saying that 40 to 50% of the jobs that we're doing right now can stand to be automated or replaced by machines or algorithms, that stat doesn't take into account the new jobs that are going to be coming on board. And what I always like to tell people is, 10 years ago, if you told your parents you wanted to become a social media marketer, they would have looked at you like you're completely crazy. And now pretty much everyone listening to the show knows someone who works in that role. It just shows how fast things move and how new opportunities you haven't even thought of yet are going to be coming on board.
And, you know, as you're mentioning, you know, when it comes to new opportunities and new trends, you know, this is exactly it. I mean, we are living in the age of the machines after all. So I think it's just important to just, you know, probably also just concentrate on the benefits of having transhumanism, especially when it comes to incorporating it within the workplace. And I see that, Flux Trends has actually partnered with Answered to investigate South African, Generation Z's, attitudes towards this. And what did they actually find in those studies?
Okay, well, we spoke to Generation Z. Generation Z would be what we call the born-free generation here in South Africa, people born after the end of apartheid. They're sort of around about 18-ish years old at the moment, so just moving into the job market, which is why we tapped onto them. And when we spoke to them, 73% of them believe that automation will reduce employment in South Africa. I disagree with that, but that's how people are feeling. You have to take that into account. At the same time, the same people we spoke to, only 13%, that's only 1 in 10 of them, believe that their own job is going to be replaced by machines. There's quite a disconnect there in those two stats, if that makes sense. So they believe that everyone else's jobs are going to be taken by machines, but not the ones that they are doing. So I believe the truth is really somewhere in the middle there. And the other key thing we saw there is that in light of jobs being replaced by machines, one of the big things that's coming up across the world, there's been rumblings about what we call universal basic income, which would basically be a grant that paid to everyone that would give people enough money to keep a reasonable lifespan or life standard that is then sponsored by society. So there's been trials done in places everywhere from Kenya to Sweden. They've done referendums on this. Canada's looked at doing trials and paying a universal basic income to basically cushion humans against the rise of the machines. And out of the survey that we did with Answered, 77% of Gen Z believe that some sort of form of universal basic income is going to be necessary for their generation in the future. So those would be some of the key things that we picked up from that study.
And what were the actual responses in regards to introducing just this kind of income? I mean, were people quite receptive to it? How did people respond to that?
Well, the majority of them believe that that's something that they would vote for, that they would absolutely be on board with. And that's in line with the studies that we've seen across the world. Younger generations are calling for this. As I said, everywhere from third world countries to first world countries, universal basic income really seems to be an idea that the time has come.
And now we've covered Generation Z. I'm curious, you know, especially with the baby boomers who have a very traditionalist work ethic, and then we have the millennials who were born at the advent of technology. Now, what have studies shown in regards to their attitudes towards transhumanism, especially within the workplace?
Well, there's a lot more wariness coming from those generations, especially when you start seeing things like microchips in your employees in order to gain access into their buildings, which sounds very futuristic, but it's here already. There are people that are doing this just for themselves, what they call like DIY body hacking, up in Sweden and in the US and in Europe. There are companies that are offering their employees opportunities to get microchips embedded in their hands to gain easier access into buildings. Basically, you can throw away your pass card and get into the building just by swiping your hand over the turnstile. And the older generations are definitely more wary of this. One of the biggest reasons for this is actually comes down to privacy concerns. Older generations yes. have a different sense of value over the privacy of their data. That's not to say that millennials and Gen Z don't care about their privacy. It's more that the younger generations understand the value of their data, but they are happy to consciously trade that data for access, for things like access to a building physically or for access to the internet, you know, like exchanging a few personal details in order to get free Wi-Fi at an airport. Younger people are much more comfortable to do that. So there's like a consciousness of the value, but they're also happy to trade it, whereas older generations tend to be quite hesitant about giving away what they deem to be their privacy.
And, you know, especially as you are unpacking how the older generation's attitudes, I must admit, I mean, there is always a part of me. I'm a millennial. I was born in 83. There's a part of me that is somewhat reluctant to have to give away too much of my information. However, I do realize that, I mean, it's part of the process of integrated technology. And that's just the run of things within workspaces in order to have everybody on their every employee on their database in the most efficient manner. I mean, technology does help in that regard. So, you know, there's always that to take into consideration.
Absolutely. I mean, the way that we've worked has changed so dramatically from the baby boomer generation to where we are now. Everything from going from cubicles to open plan offices to having meetings to disseminate information to having intranets where employees can chat to each other from different countries, never mind different departments. Like the world of work has shifted so dramatically, and we don't necessarily realize that because we've only ever worked in one particular era ourselves. For someone that is sort of 60, 70 years old, that's nearing towards the end of their career, moving into an environment like this where suddenly not only you're having to share an open plan office with some rowdy millennial and Gen Z colleagues, you're also having to share your workspace with basically machines that could be managing you or even managing the finances and making board-level decisions for the businesses you work in. It could be quite a scary place to adapt to.
And, you know, especially when it comes to traditionalist ways of working and having that sort of work ethic, I mean, it can actually be quite a scary thought. I mean, for the Generation Zs, for instance, they find this completely exhilarating and exciting, and they embrace and relish the challenge. Whereas, you know, the baby boomers, they are not completely thrilled because the thought of them being potentially replaced terrifies them.
Absolutely. Another key difference between the generations is their attitude to what work is. Up until now, our whole economies and our economists and all of our models about how the world works have been based on things like employment figures, and that's changing. For baby boomers, you not only had a job, you had a career for life. You maybe would have only switched jobs once or twice in your lifetime. If you switched anything more than sort of 5 or 7 years at a time, you're being considered a quite questionable job hopper. Then the millennials came along and we're suddenly having this gig work environment.
True.
Whereby you might work as a gig worker as an Uber driver or as a freelancer or just as a digital nomad, as we call it. Gen Z is even different. Gen Z doesn't even want to necessarily work as a freelancer. They see themselves as a generation of entrepreneurs. We did another study a couple of years back with a focus group of Gen Z who were at that stage around about 15, 16 years old. And almost every single one of those children that we interviewed did not intend to work for anyone at all. So those people are going to be very well prepared for the new future world of work, even if the sort of jobs that we think of as being the only way to earn income right now are all replaced by machines and algorithms. Those kids are going to have their own streams of income. They're going to be doing their own thing and making their own way in their world. If you are self-employed, it's very hard for a machine to replace you because you are creating your own path.
That's actually quite interesting. When you factor in the approaches to work and what millennials and baby boomers and Generation Z, how we differently define work and how we actually put that into action. It's quite interesting, especially when technology is involved and even with incorporating transhumanism. But now another factor that I'd love to just focus on or just to zone in on right now is ethics. So when it comes to ethics, how does that factor into all of this?
Okay, so one of the big things when it comes to ethics is what we call big data or weapons of mass destruction, as
yes.
they call them. Big data is very efficient, but at the same time, biases can creep in. Every algorithm that runs off big data has been created by a human being, and a human being can intentionally or unintentionally program bias into that data that would intentionally or unintentionally, again, discriminate against certain types of people. Now, when it comes to the world of work, we're talking particularly here about employment. So what we're kind of seeing is that wealthy, privileged people will be processed by people. So if you know someone and your dad has a friend that works in a big bank, your dad can probably get you an interview with his friend and you can sort of bypass the whole big data system. However, if you are a first generation in your family to be trying to get a job at a big company, your CV is going to go through a big data queue. And in all likelihood, your CV is not even going to be read by a human being until it's gone through certain levels of filtering and screening, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So those computers will basically scan through CVs looking for keywords. And could also scan through CVs looking for negative words that could discriminate against you. Like there was a study that happened in, I think it was the United Kingdom's healthcare system, whereby the computer, the algorithm, was kind of mirroring the way that the human staff were screening CVs. And they found that there's sort of a racial bias creeping in. The algorithm was seeing that the human lady in HR was rejecting applications where people had certain ethnicities in their names, and the algorithm picked up on that. But now suddenly it's doing it wholesale, so it makes it that much more difficult for someone that is outside the system to get into the system.
That is quite, it's alarming and quite fascinating that, I mean, even with the way that algorithms have been designed, that there's still that potential for some form of discrimination to happen when it comes to filtering CVs and picking out those keywords. It's actually quite disturbing.
It's very disturbing. This is why we're having this talk that we're putting together. We're doing it next week on the 1st of August in Joburg, and then we're coming to Cape Town on the 8th. We're really wanting to talk to entrepreneurs, business owners, employees and employers, people in HR, to sort of bring these sort of issues to the forefront so people can actually talk about it, because that's the thing with these sort of weapons of mass destruction. The reason why they're scary is because we don't know, as an applicant applying for a job, what that algorithm is looking for. You only know what you've written on your CV.
True.
And you don't understand what has been programmed into that bot that is basically going to determine the rest of your life. And that opacity is something that we want to break open for both sides so that we can have discussions about it, because otherwise we're going to end up in a future where we're having to deal with all sorts of new types of inequalities that we consciously or unconsciously building into the system.
Engineered and technologically enhanced inequalities at that. And before, I actually do have one more question in about two or three more questions in regards to that, but I'd just love to just welcome our listeners. You are listening to The Overnight Show on Cape Talk, your number one news and talk radio station. Remember, the number to dial is 021-446-0567, and do WhatsApp us on 072-567-1567. Voice notes are also very much welcome on that same number. Please do tweet us at Cape Talk if you happen to be in the Twitterverse at this very moment, or if you'd simply just love to keep it sweet and short, you're more than welcome to by SMSing us on 31567. That is 31567. And we are talking about transhumanism, and I actually am speaking to Bronwyn Williams from Flux Trains, who is a trains translator and future finance specialist for Flux Trains. And we are touching on transhumanism and just the integration of society in the workplace, in the workforce, and we've also been discussing how this also affects different generations as well. And also she will be hosting an open session in Johannesburg and in Cape Town next month, titled "How to Train Your Cyborg to Join Your Workforce and Vice Versa." And Bronwyn, whilst we are talking about that title, could you elaborate on the vice versa? Because I was a bit concerned when I saw that vice versa. So could you put us at ease over here?
Yeah, so this is what we're talking about, that the whole boundary between, especially in the workplace, the function that a man performs, the function that a machine performs, is blurring. So we're finding machines are becoming more human-like. I'm not sure if you've heard of Sophia the robot, who was a humanoid robot that has been granted citizenship in Saudi Arabia, for example. There's also bots or algorithms that aren't even a physical robotic type thing that have been given seats on boards in businesses in Japan, and there's one actually working for Google too. So suddenly you've got like computer programs fulfilling the role of a human, and at the same time your human employees are starting to blur with the machines that they're using. I mean, even if we just talk about the cell phones that we use, that's become so much a part of us that we could almost see that as being as an extension of ourselves. So quite a simple example. And then you've got even more extreme technologies, like Ford's put together this thing that's basically an exoskeleton. It can clip onto human factory workers to give them superhuman strength, which is very cool, because that's a way to enhance your human workforce without working against them or working without them. It's bringing the best of humanity and machinery and smart big data learning together to really improve the efficiency and the productivity and the enjoyment of working in your workplace.
You see, I think especially when it's described in that way, and if it's approached in that sense where it's actually about enhancing human activity or human performance rather within the workplace, then it is more comforting, because I think maybe one or two listeners may be thinking to themselves, you know, when it comes to human interaction, especially within the workplace, is that not at risk because of transhumanism, because of technology? I mean, I'm not too sure, like, myself personally, if I'm entirely comfortable with having a robo colleague. So.
Well, no, we're not necessarily going to be comfortable with that, especially not in the beginning.
Yes.
But if you think about it, even your email that you use is effectively a robo-colleague. It's something that your grandmother probably would have freaked out about having in her office. She would have seen that as quite threatening. But what we're seeing now is we're seeing much more thoughtful technologies coming on board. One such technology would be an advertising agency in France. It's built together the smart, basically like a Siri, like what you would have on your iPhone.
Yes.
A smart personal assistant, but it's for the whole company. And this AI application almost becomes like a colleague. That job is to integrate all the individual employees in that organization in such a way that the lowest intern is able to contribute ideas and share her knowledge with people even at board level. So this AI is called Marcel, and Marcel's job is to integrate the agency into one kind of hive mind. So their whole thing is about getting the best out of their human employees and maximizing that talent that they have hidden all over the world in a way that they never would have been able to do without that artificial intelligence working as that bridge, as that go-between in all those agency offices.
So as you are unpacking this now, I mean, especially the reference to the email, I mean, I'm, you know, it's, you know, very, very, very truthfully said that actually is a robo colleague. It has been for quite a number of years. So, I mean, it's just a way of finding that right balance between having a human workforce and a robo workforce and allowing them to work together in such a way that your human workforce does not feel demoralized or threatened by the appearance or the performance of these robo colleagues.
Yes, and that's something very important to keep in mind. Even if you do have some sort of an evil corporate boss that wants to replace all of his staff with machines and just, you know, cut costs all the way down to their bare bones, that person would be at a disadvantage if he does not tap into the human talent within his walls and without. Because at the end of the day, every business that exists today has human customers. And human customers very often want a human touch. I'm not sure if you've seen, but almost all of our big banks here in South Africa have bought in like the Pepper robot, which is kind of like a humanoid looking customer service bot.
Yes.
Everyone that I've spoken to has said, oh, that's kind of interesting, taking a selfie with it and then walk right past the robot to go talk to a real human in the bank. Because people, especially when you've got a problem, you want someone that's going to be able to engage with you. And quite often what you're looking for is emotional connection. Humans are not entirely rational beings. We have a lot of irrationality built into our very DNA, and we want a human connection. That's part of what we pay for when we go to a restaurant. It's not only about efficiency, it's about the experience. And if we forget about the humans, either inside our business or outside of our business, then you might be very profitable for a short period of time, but you're certainly not going to be a legacy business going into the future. And that's something very key to keep in mind when we know now that Fortune 500 companies, that's like the equivalent to our top 40 on our JSE, have now between a 10 and 15 year lifespan. 100 years ago, they had a 67 year lifespan. So businesses can't afford to just be looking at today's bottom line. They have to be thinking further ahead.
That's quite fascinating. My goodness. And, you know, as you're talking about, you know, especially when it comes to occupations where human interaction is required, I'm quite intrigued. You know, as we are definitely progressive, technologically progressive within workspaces, is it actually possible that there are certain occupations that can remain AI free?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Just look at what's going on around you, especially in the millennial generation. If you are a millennial, you'll know what I'm talking about. You probably know friends that work in a very creative industry. In the 80s, if you were leaving school in the 80s and you said, no, I want to go make craft jewelry and sell it at flea markets, your parents would have dragged you off and tried to get you to give you a bit of a come to Jesus speech and try to send you off to college to become a doctor, lawyer, accountant, whatever. Now, I know so many of my peers that live a very luxurious lifestyle doing something completely creative that could never be taken over by a robot. Things like craft gin distilleries. Yes, wow. Gin can be made cheaper in a bigger batches in a completely AI-driven factory.
Yes.
But consumers want to buy the small batch stuff and go to the tasting at the facility where it's made and meet the owner. Because at the end of the day, you're selling to humans once again. If we were selling to robots that didn't care about any of the stuff that makes you feel warm and fuzzy and gives you a connection with the product you're interacting with,
then
it would make sense to use robots for everything. But when you're selling to humans, sometimes all we want is that human touch. Look at the rise of things like artisanal bakeries and small cake studios and all those sort of creative things that people are very willing to spend more money on to get your center good. It's the whole hipster movement thing.
True, yes.
Millennials. And Gen Z have their own alternatives of that. Gen Z are more sort of business orientated, I would say, and millennials are more kind of creative orientated, but still very much looking at doing things that connect with humans. Like, look at all of the Instagram influencers that have come on board. Yes, we do have AI influencers, things like Will Michaela, who's like a fake Instagram influencer. But at the end of the day, who's going to be our youngest female billionaire in the world? Well, it's one Miss Kylie Jenner. And she's most definitely not a robot.
No. Yeah.
Well, I don't, yeah, no, so I think somebody, I don't know, some people might beg to, I don't know, they may have their own opinion on that, but. Yes.
But, yeah, the makeup might give you that impression, but no, she's a flesh and blood human being, and she's built a following because of her fallibility and because of who she is.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And now to ask you about the open sessions that will be happening next month. So I actually just want to clarify. I understand that the ticket sales have ended for the open session in Johannesburg. Are there actually still tickets available for hopeful attendees in Cape Town?
Yes, Cape Town's going to close next week, so they'll be taking bookings until next Friday. The session takes place on the 8th at the Fire and Ice. And if you want to get any details, you can head on over to the FluxTrends.co.za website, and you'll be able to find all the details there. At Joburg, we will be having facilities for a few walk-ins, but you'll have to make arrangements through our office. So please give us a call if you are desperate for a ticket there. Join the conversation.